Tonight, from Los Angeles, The Advocate, Howard Miller, guest advocate, Joe O'Teary, and the moderator, Victor Palmieri.
Good evening and welcome to The Advocate. Every week at this time, The Advocates looks at an important public question, what is for you a very practical choice. And tonight, our issue is drug use, one of our greatest domestic concerns. Specifically, our question is this: should all drugs be legalized? And our guest advocate, Joseph O'Teary, says yes.
Yes, all drugs should be legalized, because adult private conduct cannot be controlled by morally oriented laws, but only by the self-control displayed by a mature society. With me tonight to prove this point are Dr. Thomas Zaz, professor of psychiatry at the State University of New York at Syracuse, Dr. Paul Lowinger, professor of psychiatry at Wayne State University, Detroit, Michigan.
But our regular advocate, Howard Miller, says no.
Tonight's proposal would make freely available all drugs, including heroin, hallucinogens, amphetamines, and barbiturates, to anyone who wished them, and would allow anyone who wanted to manufacture them. Those who make this proposal say that it will reduce addiction and help to control crime. But common sense and the experience in every country in which anything like this has been tried is that it will increase addiction and, in fact, increase crime. Tonight's proposal is a license to drug companies and to any other legitimate or illegitimate enterprise to manufacture, develop, and market any drug that it wishes, and to hook anyone that it wishes on drugs. In the name of reform and responsibility, tonight's proposal will bring terror.
Thank you,
gentlemen. With me to oppose this proposal are Frank Natale, director of the Phoenix House Programs, a program of drug rehabilitation, Larry Rader, former associate counsel of the House Select Committee on Crime, and Richard Callahan, New England regional director of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs.
Well, those of you who are regular viewers of the programs on the Public Broadcasting Service know that this is the month of the Turned On Crisis. This is a four-week series, programs devoted to almost every use of drugs from almost every perspective. The Turned On Crisis is a concerted effort of Public Broadcasting, your network, to examine the facts, the causes, and the consequences of drug use in this country. And tonight, as a part of that effort, The Advocates looks at a basic part of the drug problem. There's a fundamental question about government regulation of individual behavior. Mr. O'Teary will propose that a full range of drugs, including narcotics, marijuana, hallucinogenics, amphetamines, and barbiturates, be made available to all adults, just as alcohol is made available. He proposes that the role of government and law be changed from that of the policeman to that of regulating only the manufacture and sale of drugs. Well, Mr. O'Teary, why do you support the legalization and ready accessibility of all drugs?
Mr. Palmieri, as extreme as our proposition may sound, we believe that we can show that by legalizing all drugs, you will have the following results. There will be less crime, because drugs will be cheap enough so that addicts will not have to steal to obtain money to purchase them. The tax-free criminal drug monopoly will be destroyed because of their inability to compete with cheap legal drugs. There'll be fewer addicts because the forbidden fruit temptation of drug use will be diminished by its openness, and the drug subculture, which makes drugs available, will disappear. There will be fewer deaths from overdoses because the strength of drugs will be controlled by federal standards. Hepatitis cases will be diminished because it will no longer be criminal to possess needles and syringes, and users will have sterile equipment to use. But more importantly, an adult's right to be let alone, his right to determine for himself what is good for him, and not to be forced to accept the moral judgments of society as they relate to his private conduct, demand that he have the right to use drugs if he chooses to do so. This position, Mr. Palmieri, is an attack on drug use through greater reliance on personal liberty. With me tonight to prove the effectiveness of this kind of an approach is Dr. Thomas Zaz from Syracuse.
Dr. Zaz, welcome to The Advocate.
Dr. Zaz, will you tell us, please, how can society control human behavior, including drug use?
Mr. O'Terry, human behavior can be controlled in two ways, and two ways only. One is by self-control, namely the person controls his own behavior. This is a principle we now use, for example, with respect to religion. A person is free to control his own religious behavior. The other method is control by others, especially by politicians, priests, and now psychiatrists. Now, these two methods define the fundamental moral and political issues of our day, namely individualism and freedom versus control by others, which in politics is totalitarianism.
Doctor, can self-control ever really work to control the drug problem?
Well, we know, and we'll come to that, I'm sure, later, that self-control can work. But let me again emphasize the moral and political underpinnings of it. Patrick Henry said, give me liberty or give me death. He didn't say, give me the Federal Bureau of Narcotics or protect me from temptation. He said, give me liberty. So to some extent, the Western free societies, and especially England and the United States, are based on the proposition that he who governs least governs best. And secondly, on the proposition which we love to disobey now, that do not prohibit what you cannot enforce.
Doctor, do you feel that society has a right to impose a moral standard by the will of the majority?
Society may have the legal right, it certainly doesn't have the moral right. It did that with respect to slavery. That didn't make it morally right.
Doctor, has there ever been a society which people could sell, buy, and consume at will addictive drugs like opium?
Has there ever been such a society? Now, that question and the answer to it is a testament to the effectiveness of modern education, which people like Bertrand Russell and many others have said is propaganda, 98% propaganda. Of course there has been such a society, but probably very, very few viewers would know where that society is. Perhaps they would think it's Afghanistan or medieval Hungary. No, it so happens that that society is the United States of America prior to 1915, when the criminal Harrison Narcotic Act was enacted.
Professor.
Before 1915, an American could go into a drugstore and buy opium, and the country was in quite good shape, better than now.
Professor, we'll accept the statement of history and leave it to Mr. Miller to question the conclusion.
Well, as a matter of fact, Dr. Zaz, before 1914, there were 200,000 heroin and opium addicts in the United States. And after the passage of the Harrison Act, within 5 years, that number dropped to 50,000. So, in fact, the actual numbers of users and addicts dropped dramatically because of the passage of the law.
Mr. Miller, that is a statement which I do not accept.
Well, if you will read the prevalence and trend of drug addiction in the United States and factors influencing it by Kolb and Dumeg in a public health report printed in 1924, you will find the full statistical basis for that. Now, if that is true, does that change your view at all?
That is not true, because we are immediately hung up on the definition of an addict. Many of those people were old ladies who took tincture of opium to go to sleep. Oh. And the Federal Bureau of Narcotics turns around and calls them addicts so that it can justify its laws.
Well, let's look at another example.
How many cigarette addicts are there in America?
In 1914, in the World War I, when we still had the influence of the pre-Harrison Act days, one out of 400 men inducted for the draft had to be disqualified because of drug addiction. In World War II and today, the number is down to one out of 10,000. Those are not old ladies. Those are young men.
They didn't have to be disqualified. They took opium instead of cigarettes. You can be a very good soldier on opium. That is a physiological fact.
And you don't think that heroin and opium are in fact dangerous drugs that harm the user?
If misused, they harm the user. If used properly, they do not harm the user. I am sorry to say, is safer physiologically than alcohol or tobacco. I am not advocating drug use, incidentally.
Why not?
Because I believe that a person is rather foolish if he does not take good care of his body.
Now,
my position is against drug use, but control by self-discipline.
Do you think alcohol is as addictive as opium? That's an astonishing statement. Opium and heroin are addictive drugs.
Everything, Mr. Miller, in my opinion, is addictive. Two of the things most addictive are food and sex.
And you would make no...
Would you prohibit them? There are more people dying of ice cream probably in America than of heroin.
And that is... Would it concern you at all if there were additional opium users? You really would, you would treat opium like ice cream. And that's your testimony?
I would, but the brunt of my testimony is
with
that
all the different flavors and the advertising and hoping that children use it because it's good
not
for
children.
Them. But if it's ice cream, my goodness, ice cream, Dr. Zaz.
My position is that drugs should be legal, and I'd rather like to speak of the repeal of anti-drug laws.
No, let's talk about ice cream.
Let him answer.
Yes, well, let me answer.
All right.
But it was my very fundamental position that we are only talking about adults. Children don't have the right to choose their religion either.
They have the right to choose their flavor of ice cream.
Yes, but I am not suggesting that children should have rights to drugs.
Well,
I am
gentlemen,
very clear on that.
The substance of the discussion has melted away, if you'll forgive me. Mr. Miller? Thank you, Dr. Saad.
Thank you.
Will you continue, Mr. Oteri?
Yes, Dr. Zass will be back later in the program. Dr. Zass has pointed out one way to control drug abuse. Now we would like to show you how the present laws affect your life. We went to New York City and spoke with the parents of a former heroin user. The commanding officer of the narcotics division of the New York City Police Department, a druggist, a grocery owner in Harlem, and a New York cab driver. We asked them about the illegal drug market, crime, and how legalization of all drugs might affect their lives.
Why is it that I'd extend to hold up people? Is it high price or what?
I believe that you have a point when you say high price. Now, all these drugs is pennies. It's worth pennies before they go into the open market. Now, if these drug addicts could get these drugs that they need at their normal fee, there would be no crime, hardly any of it. Because all these fellows are capable of going out there and making a few dollars, and they could afford their habit. But this way, positively not, they cannot.
Do you think the law helps now?
Is the law helping to solve this problem? Huh. That's a question mark.
Well, no, I don't feel as though the law is helping in taking them and putting them in a cage or anything like that and treating them as animals. If the law really wanted to help them, I think they should take and legalize it.
The law don't help throwing them in jail. So this thing is ruining people's lives, because once you get a record, you know, you can't do anything.
9.5% of approximately 186,000 people who were arrested for all types of crimes admitted to drug or dangerous drug use. This figure, I think, probably does understate the problem, because many persons who are addicts or drug abusers would not admit it.
How much of the crime do you think in this community is directly related to drug abuse?
Well, I would say about 90%. Less than 1% really actually reported.
Why is that?
Because what's the use if we report it? That's just the end of it. It just goes down in record as being reported.
The crime that you suffer. How much does this cost the customer?
Well, I would say the cost of our protection would be about 10%. We have to hire an extra man to get that extra protection through the store when we could probably operate with less help.
Well, you know, you can go to the store, you don't even know if you're going to get back.
I walk the street with fear.
Why is it so difficult to get a cab at night in certain areas of the city?
Well, some cab drivers, they're afraid to go in certain areas. I'm afraid driving in the day. Because at night you stand a more of a chance of getting robbed and mugged.
Have you ever been robbed?
Yeah, I was robbed once. Drug addicts, they commit more of the crimes on the cab drivers.
Wouldn't it cut down on the crime if they legalized drugs?
Maybe it will. Maybe it will.
Would a fellow have to come into a hall and hit a woman in the head, or stick her with a knife, or snatch her purse? Or take a man and take a knife and put to his throat, or put a gun to his head? Would this have to be done if it was legalized? I mean, these questions can be answered by anyone.
Now, to explain on a more personal basis the message in that film, we have Dr. Paul Loewinger from Detroit.
Dr. Loewinger, welcome.
Thank you.
Dr. Loewinger, what major public health problems would be eliminated by legalizing drugs?
The addict suffers from a great many serious health problems, including hepatitis, serious infections of the heart like subacute bacterial endocarditis, all kinds of skin problems, He gets overdoses and may die or be seriously handicapped by a period. He has a high rate of venereal disease, and his overall health is just terrible. He lives under such unhygienic conditions with respect to food and housing that he is in very poor condition, and it's a great tragedy for both him and his family.
Doctor, would you explain for us how, in your opinion, crime would be reduced by this proposition?
The heroin addict is forced to turn to crime because he supports a habit which costs him $50 or $100 a day, and he has to steal from twice to four or five times that amount to buy his drug to prevent himself from getting, as he terms it, sick. And in so doing, he's forced into all kinds of street crime, and it's from this that he, his family, and his neighborhood, and we all suffer greatly. He is the victim, as was explained earlier, of an illegal, hugely profitable, tax-free conspiracy, a tacit conspiracy involving government, law enforcement, legislators, the medical profession, and the crime syndicate, under whatever name you wish to categorize it. This conspiracy has preyed on the black ghetto for almost three generations now, and it is now also preying on white middle-class neighborhoods more recently and destroying much of the fabric of our society, so that the addict is a victim of this production and merchandising mechanism, which pushes him into the addictive life and makes a criminal out of him, and he suffers as a criminal, not just as a sick person.
One more question.
Doctor, would legalizing drugs reduce the desire to use them?
Legalizing drugs would destroy this terribly powerful $3 billion a year, according to Forbes magazine, business, which merchandises and produces the addict criminal, and would remove the lure of the forbidden and produce a situation in which people could come closer to free choice and would have less pressure on them to enter the horrors of heroin addiction.
Ms. Miller, cross-examination.
Lowinger, you're a doctor. You agree with Dr. Zaza's evaluation of the danger of heroin. Do you think properly used it's like ice cream, food, or sex?
I would not characterize heroin as equivalent to ice cream, food, or sex. I think it's an addictive an addictive drug, and of course, misuse of food produces obesity.
An addictive drug, which
constitutes food addiction.
An addictive drug, when addictive, causes serious disability, may cause death. It, by no sensible category, can be put in the same category as food, can it?
Food misused is a health problem. An addictive drug misused, abused, is a health problem. The horror is when we make it also a criminal problem.
Well, tell me what you think would happen with legalization with the drug companies, now free and available to market heroin, to advertise, market, develop, and to build their market. That does not concern you at all? Do you think the drug companies would...
It certainly does concern me, and I don't want to... turn the matter over to the drug companies.
But we're talking about legalizing drugs and allowing them to
I want to see a humane, government-regulated system under community control in which people would have an opportunity to get treatment or to use drugs depending on what they chose.
But tonight we're talking about free availability. Let me ask you about the crime statistics. You indicate that crime would go down. Why is it then that in a country where we know about the exact experiment, in Japan, where amphetamines after World War II were illegal, and there were 5,000 arrests for crime-related drugs in 1955, and then a sharp illegality, enforcement, cut down on manufacture, the crimes dropped to under 500 in 1958?
If you exclude the crime of possessing or selling drugs...
No, these are related crimes, not possessing or selling. These
are robberies. Let me explain. Amphetamine addicts in the United States can buy this terrible toxic drug rather cheaply. They do not characteristically steal things. It is a heroin addict that can't buy the drug that has to steal things to get money to pay for heroin.
But if the drug were freely available, let's go out another way. If the drug were freely available, there certainly would be more heroin and amphetamine users than there are now, would there not?
No.
Well, then why did it happen again in Japan, where there were 55,000 arrests for illegal amphetamine use in 1955, one of the few countries where amphetamines were freely available, and when it was made illegal, when the manufacture was stopped, when there was severe enforcement, the number of arrests dropped to 271 3 years later.
Mr. Miller, drug statistics from police sources in every country in the world, including the United States, are unreliable. And let me say a second thing, which is...
If that is true,
we're in the midst of a drug epidemic, not just in the United States, but in other countries. And this epidemic is fed by our present laws.
If that in fact is true, if in fact not only in Japan, but in Sweden and in other countries, legalization has always caused greater drug use, would that change your opinion?
Legalization has not caused greater drug use.
No, the question is that what your opinion hinges on? If that's true, in fact, it would change your opinion, wouldn't it?
My opinion is that legalization of drugs would decrease drug use by taking out the tax-free monopoly that is hugely profitable and is merchandising drugs.
Well, what is to stop the underworld and the illegal manufacturers from simply putting on the market yet a higher dosage?
There would be no profit in it. Heroin could be like methadone, 10 cents
a day. No profit except for the drug companies.
One more question.
No, there would be no profit for anyone. It would be controlled by the government.
No, I'm sorry. You've been brought here under a misconception. We're talking about the free availability of drugs. Suppose that is the proposition. The drug companies were free to market drugs the way liquor companies now market alcohol, to advertise, distribute, sell, make them freely available. Not government control preventing use, but that. What is your position on that?
Two factors are involved there, Mr. Miller. One is that some lingering faith in the capitalist system, competition would drive down the profit.
The companies would just charge what the traffic would
bear. And secondly, we have the right under our system to regulate price control. And I live in a state where the price for which alcohol is sold is regulated.
It's fair traded. It's not regulated. I have no further questions.
Gentlemen, thank you both very much. Professor, we're glad to have had you with us. Well, Mr. O'Terry, we'll be back to you in a few moments to hear your case on rebuttal. Now let's go to Mr. Miller. Miller, what's your case against the proposition?
Of course, this is not simply a question to start with the first assertion of individual choice of the individual in a vacuum. The individual makes his choice depending on the tone of society, the commercialization of the product, the legality of the use. It is not simply individual choice. A society in which drugs are legalized, are commercially advertised, are freely available, is a society where many, many, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of more people, will use drugs than otherwise would not. The tone of the society sets the individual choice. Every place where this has happened, there has been an increase in legalization, a decrease when there's been a crackdown. The experience is true in the United States before and after 1914. It's true in Japan. It's true in Sweden. How will crime go down? In fact, crime will go up because more people will become dependent on the drugs, and dependent on the drugs, unable to work, required to go out and steal to buy whatever the price is. And the thought that this will be controlled any more than alcohol is simply a fantasy. Our proposal, in fact, we have 5 to 11 million alcoholics in this country with their attendant misery, personal and to their families, 26,000 deaths on the highways. This proposal is to add to that millions upon millions more of heroin addicts and of other users. In fact, this proposal is not to allow free men to make that free choice. It is to create a society in which millions will make the choice which hurts them and others. All this is said by Dr. Zaz in the name of freedom, just as he disputes that opium can be harmful. But those who use these drugs are not free. They are enslaved.
It's demonic, it's satanic. It's like speeding up your karma.
For me, I can't say for other people because, you know, there's been so much blamed on stuff, you know, it's ruined so many lives and all this, you know, it's just fucked everybody's life up and all this cost people years of their life and killed people, you know, and all this, but aside from all that, the feeling, you know, is still a very, very good, beautiful feeling, you know, the heroin.
It ruins your blood. After 7 years, you can't live anymore. You die. You become too sick physically. You want to die because you are so sick physically. It takes too much to get out. You have to do it. Oh, your habit increases every day. Every day it increases. If it comes to a point where after 7 years you just simply must die.
I've been doing it lately. Because, it takes the worry away about, us not having our own place or us not having any money, or having jobs. Just being mellow, just feeling good.
I wish whoever would do this, I never try it.
To talk to us about drug use and abuse, I've asked to join us a man who works with addicts today, Mr. Frank Natale.
Hello, Mr. Natale. Thanks for coming with us.
Frank Natale is co-director of the Phoenix House Program, a nationwide series of drug rehabilitation centers. Mr. Natale, it should be unnecessary to ask you this question, but what is the danger of heroin and opium? Like food?
You just saw the movie. I can hardly believe that such irresponsible remarks that have been made so far. To say that heroin addicts and opium addicts do not harm themselves is so absurd after working for 5 to 8 years now with some 5,000 of them.
Well, wait a minute, Mr. Natale. That was not what was said. I don't think you heard it right.
I'll try it again.
What was said is that they may hurt themselves, but that self-control is a question.
They may help themselves?
They may hurt themselves. It may be hurtful.
They all hurt themselves. They all destroy themselves, and they all destroy their families and the people around them and hurt them very deeply. And takes years and years and years to work with them and pull them out of it. To say that they may is absurd.
Are there people who, in fact, act through self-control and use drugs like heroin and opium successfully?
Well, yes. We all know the state of most people emotionally. To say that there are some rare exceptions of human beings that can control it, yes. But when you're talking about responsible lawmaking, you're talking for 8-year-old kids, you're talking for irresponsible people, you're talking for emotionally immature people also. You're not just talking for the few people who are in an ivory tower who somehow are emotionally put together.
Well, talking about the addiction problem, would legalization of drugs in fact solve the addiction problem?
That again is such a myth. The best analogy, I guess, would be marijuana, and you can play it with any drug. The marijuana grown in the United States ranges between 4 to 5% pure hydrocannabinol. You go down to Mexico, it's between 6 and 8%. You go all the way into Africa, you get into Gunji, which is as high as 20%. The United States government, if they do legalize that one drug and all drugs, will have to establish a limit like 80-proof booze or 100-proof booze. Then, of course, what the black market will do is they will bring a higher grade of drug in at a cheaper price, and there it is. There is no such thing as legalization in terms of drugs. This is impossible.
Do addicts, in fact, we've talked about personal harm to themselves, do they, in fact, only hurt themselves?
No, I don't know any addicts or ex-addicts who have never hurt just themselves. They disappoint their families, they steal for the most part, they become prostitutes, they do all kinds of things to
survive.
But
if these drugs were freely available, would more people use them? Would the incidence of crime go up, or would we have a decrease in crime?
It's obvious that the incidence of crime would go up. The incidence of crime, 90% of the people released from Rikers Island Penitentiary in the city of New York have a history of drug abuse.
Would the incidence of use go up? Would more people use them?
Of course, because it's available. Of course they. And we're tacitly approving that they're not dangerous by legalizing them, which is the highest, most irresponsible
okay.
I've ever
Thank
heard.
You. Mr. O'Terry, I hear the witness say that your witnesses made irresponsible statements.
Yes, and I think we ought to better clear the air quickly. My witness didn't make an irresponsible statement. Mr. Miller somehow erroneously misconstrued what my witness said by not letting him finish. My witness was pointing out, Frank, that you can hurt yourself by overeating and having a heart problem developed by weight. He said ice cream can cause this obesity and Howard immediately seized upon the ice cream. So let's clear the air about that. We don't equate heroin with ice cream as far as potential for harm. Now, you tell us that...
Okay.
All right. Now,
We're in agreement.
Okay. We happen to be anti-drug, too. Now, you say that no, you can't depend on a society to be able to regulate itself. You say that there are a small number of people who can handle heroin. Is that correct?
Huxley did. All right. A few others did, yes.
Okay.
Coleridge, a few famous, yeah, rare
Coleridge
ones, yeah.
Wrote Kublai Khan while he was a stone junkie.
200,000 200,000 kids in Harlem and New York City just aren't that much together.
I think what we ought to understand clearly is that we're not talking kids, we're talking adults. So let's stick to adults if we may.
Well, you can say adults then. I won't say kids.
All right, you heard the doctor say, you know, we're talking adults. So now, if you have an adult who has this togetherness that seems to be so absent from America society, don't you think his right to choose for himself what he wants to do transcends your right to tell him what he can do?
Only if he, with all his intellect, is that selfish.
All right. What if he is? Doesn't he have that right?
Well, then we are now making laws for all the highly intellectual, selfish people in the United States as opposed to the rest of the country.
Yeah, but Frank, don't you concede that perhaps the function of law is to regulate public conduct and not to interfere with private moral conduct? For example, Frank, are you opposed to two unmarried people, 30 years old, being able to engage in sexual intercourse?
No.
That's against the law because this public morality we talk about makes it a crime.
I don't know anybody 8 years old who died of an overdose from sex.
I don't know anybody 30 who has either, Frank.
All right.
The problem, Frank, is
so
I'm trying to point out the analogy is simple.
Now it's
not
ice cream, now it's sex.
Right. What I'm saying to you what I'm trying to get you to admit is that in a free society, as a human being, you have a right to engage in certain forms of moral conduct. If you're an adult and you're capable of making the decision, even if those decisions hurt you.
Yes, but you're not realizing that currently the human race as a race, as animals, are barely past the point or age of puberty. So you can't make these kinds of laws.
Well, then who makes them?
You
the
can't.
Collective
if
puberty
we were
of America?
Very, if we were all brilliant and self-contained and knew ourselves emotionally as well as we should, then probably nobody would want drugs in the first place.
That's what we're hoping for, the millennium.
Well,
now,
unfortunately, we're not there
right?
yet, but
let
the way to get there is surely not to get
Sounds
everybody nodding
question.
In the
all right,
corner.
Short answer.
You were...
I mean, you know,
let's
all sit and nod in the corner and we'll really get there, right?
You were a fairly successful advertising man before you got hooked on drugs, isn't that correct?
Interior designer.
Interior designer. Nobody forced you to take drugs?
No.
You made the choice yourself?
Yes, it did.
You got hooked?
Yes, it did.
You had the inner moral strength to kick it? You're a better man for today?
I had a lot of help.
All right. Everybody in America is willing to give you help.
I didn't just go up the mountain and say I'm kicking.
I'm sure you didn't do that.
Mr. Natale?
Okay.
Thanks very much.
You're
let's go on.
So talk to us about the real consequences of this, that is the number of people that would be affected and how to handle a vast number that are affected. I've asked to join us tonight, Mr. Larry Rader.
Good evening, Mr. Rader.
Mr. Rader is a former Associate General Counsel of the House of Representatives Select Committee on Crime. Mr. Rader, does any other country in the world legalize drugs as this proposal would for the United States?
No.
Why not?
Well, any society that has tried it has found a substantial increase in the use of the substance and has finally had to give it up.
Where has that occurred?
Well, I suppose China is the first thing that we think about. Actually, you can't blame it on the Chinese. You have to blame it on the British East India Company.
They wanted to give all those Chinese the individual freedom of choice to use opium.
I think it was the good old profit motive. They were buying too much tea from China at the time and running out of bullion, so they decided to use opium as a medium of exchange.
Now you said that was done for profit. We've had some talk here tonight about the price going down so it would be freely available. Would legalization result in a low price of heroin?
I don't feel that it would. I think we would see the drug companies reacting like they have in the past. They give you a special introductory offer until you got hooked, and then they jack up the price.
What about the decrease in crime? You've worked with the House Select Committee on Crime. Do you find it credible that crime will decrease if drugs are legalized?
I think that crime generally would increase for the reason that you would not have control over your senses and would perhaps do things normally you would not. Certainly, we consider motor vehicle homicide, for instance. People under the influence of drugs while driving would certainly be killing people.
There are 26,000 under the influence killed by people driving under the
One
influence of alcohol. Well, generally, what do you think would happen in this country in terms of these being freely marketed and available by drug companies, heroin, amphetamines, barbiturates? What would occur?
Well, I think generally you would find a breakdown in our society. Most people would agree that people who are on drugs lose sight of their goals and are generally become non-productive. We're going to need a bunch of bright, clear-thinking people to solve the kind of problems this country has coming up.
Mr. O'Terry.
Mr. Rada, do you think we need the same bright, productive people who got us into these problems?
Well, I think each generation has to build on the past.
Right. Now, you seem to stress crime. You talk about motor vehicle crimes. You're aware, are you not, that it's against the law to drive a motor vehicle while under the influence of a narcotic drug in most states?
Yes.
All right. So that the crime is driving the vehicle while stoned, correct?
In the way you phrase it, yeah.
And under our particular model, the crime would still be driving the vehicle while stoned, correct?
Right.
So, I mean, where is going to be... How many K people did you interview when you were with that select committee?
Oh, I suppose maybe 5 or 10,000.
5 or 10,000. How many documented cases did you have of motor vehicle accidents caused by stone drug freaks driving?
Oh, I suppose roughly 90 in the state of Nebraska alone.
90 in Nebraska?
Yeah. Yeah.
And what other states? What's the total?
We did not run a total.
That's amazing. Now... that you didn't run a total. Now, you talked to us about drug companies. I take it we both agree that drug companies gouge?
Yes.
All right. Now, what if we had... And by the way, do you still work for the government?
Yes.
You're familiar with the legislative process as it's carried out down there in Washington, aren't you?
Yes.
And you know...
I don't want you to give away too much to the witness now. He's counsel for a select committee.
Right. Now, you know that I... great and elected Congress could pass laws to regulate profit or to set standards on heroin or any other drug that was manufactured, don't you?
No, I'm not too sure about that.
You know, they could prohibit advertising. They just get rid of cigarettes.
They can do anything that is politically popular.
Right. And if it's not politically popular, to recognize the issue as it is today... that human beings are being suffocated and actually being ground down by harsh narcotic laws with tremendously stringent enforcement provisions, they won't change them, will they?
I think they will change laws if they see
Did you read the new drug bill?
Need. Yes.
The penalties are increased, aren't they?
No.
They're not?
No.
5 to 15?
That is for a separate, isolated offense.
How about that special drug offender? 90 okay. years on a second offense. Yeah. That's not an increase?
Dealing with the mafia, yes.
That doesn't say mafia. Now, don't get personal. It doesn't say mafia. It says nothing about mafia, but we won't get into that part of it.
The penalties were reduced for first-time simple possession.
There we go. The penalties were reduced for first-time simple possession, and you couldn't prosecute them because the Leary case prohibited you from using the evidence, right?
Wrong.
So what do you mean wrong? You mean to say that you could get a conviction on a possession case after Leary?
As long as you didn't worry about the tax stamp.
You know, I'm perfectly happy to have our viewers ready to pass the bar exam in evidence.
I'm sorry about that.
But I'd just as soon
You're
get
right.
back to the question.
You're right. The fact of the matter
Last
is
question.
That our great and general Congress down there has just recently passed a new drug bill, have they not?
Yes.
And have retained much of the same approach to law enforcement rather than an approach to humanity, haven't they?
No.
It's a law enforcement bill, isn't it?
Yes, but there's a separate bill on treatment and rehabilitation.
Yeah.
Well, we certainly brought you two together. I'm very grateful to you for appearing on The Advocate.
Thank you.
I understand why most of the questions are not on the proposal. Those that are don't go to the point. There are 26,000 deaths caused by alcoholics who drive despite the fact that it is illegal to drive under the influence of alcohol. Once use becomes more widespread, inevitably there are more people who use it while they're driving. Inevitably there are more deaths. In fact, this will enormously increase the harmful conduct that we are all subject to. And to talk to that point, I've asked to join us Mr. Richard Callahan.
Callahan, we're glad to have you with us.
Mr. Callahan is New England Regional Director of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs. Mr. Callahan, if drugs were freely available, would that decrease or increase the kind of harmful conduct?
Well, you hear all kinds of positions stated. I think if you analyze the point you just made, alcoholism, the abuse of alcohol, you can go into any court in this country any day of the week, and you'll find some type of antisocial behavior, criminal activity, the slaughter on the highways that you mentioned, the destruction of family life, which all can be directly attributed to the abuse of this, which is considered by many to be a relatively soft drug, and it is a central nervous system depressant. So I think if you build upon that, and talk about some of these other substances which are just so much more potent and powerful that the results of legalization of those would be catastrophic.
Is it fair to talk of this, as Dr. Zaz does, as an individual decision? Is it, should it be simply treated as an individual decision of an individual person to use heroin?
Well, no. No man is an island, to coin an old verse that somebody wrote somewhere.
John Donne.
Yes, right. John, I forget what's his name. But every individual who involves himself in this type of activity does involve others, either by choice or unwillingly. But people who do abuse drugs do have an effect on other people in our society, and that's why society has the right to control.
Now, we're talking about the use of any drug, in effect, self-medication, narcotics for the use of pain, any drug without prescription. Is there a danger simply of mistake, accident, and overdose without the controls we now have?
Well, there's no question. We send doctors to school for 8 or 9 years, pharmacists. What we'd have to do is train 250 million people to become pharmacologists.
One more question.
What, in your opinion, Mr. Callahan, would happen in this country if this proposal were adopted?
I think based on what has happened in other civilizations, and it's hard to predict what would happen in ours, I think it could well sow the seeds of our own destruction. Joseph Stalin, to coin, I don't think he was in the mafia, Joe. Joseph Stalin once said, if the United States falls, it'll be an inside job, and that could be drugs.
Thank you, Mr. Gallagher.
Mr. O'Terry?
I'd like to say that, you know, no man is an island. For a guy that flunked English Lit, you've come a long way.
I should explain. This inside joke comes from the fact Mr. Callahan and Mr. O'Terry are both from Boston. Is that correct?
And both
went to
school. College classmates
and
were in the Marine Corps together. Yeah. And he's still wrong. Now, Mr. Callahan, let's talk for a moment, if we will. The Federal Bureau of Narcotics, the predecessor for that monster you head, has been in existence for a considerable period of time, hasn't it? 40, 50 years?
Yes.
All right. And would you tell us, do you really and truly believe that there's a drug epidemic in this country today?
Yes, I really do.
All right. And up until May 1st of this year, when the new drug bill goes into effect, we've had laws providing for mandatory imprisonment for a minimum of 5 years for many violations and as much as 20, haven't we? Isn't that correct?
That's correct.
And in the 5 years you've been a narc, the size of your force has increased, and I don't use that term in any derogatory sense. In the 5 years you've been with them, the size of your force has increased from what? A couple hundred men to 700, 800?
Approximately.
The new bill gives you another 300, right?
Approximately.
All kinds of people. Plenty of money,
well,
and yet you can't stop drug problems, can you?
We'll have about 1,000 agents to police the world, which I don't think is an overabundance.
Do you believe it's America's job to police the whole world for drugs, Mr. Callahan?
No, I don't, but we do have agents assigned overseas from whence these drugs
emanate. Have American agents overseas?
Yes, we do.
Really? They're not involving themselves in any way in the drug policies of other countries, are they, Mr. Callahan? I'll withdraw the question. As a practical matter, Mr. Callahan, you've been a police officer for the federal government for some 18 years, haven't you?
No, I haven't.
No, how many?
16.
16. Sorry about that. And the fact is that you haven't come across any cases of drug users being involved in auto accidents, or violent kinds of auto accidents, or crime, have you?
Oh, yes, I have.
Have you? How many?
Oh, I have no way of counting or estimating that.
It's amazing. You fellas keep statistics on every time you pick your nose, but you never have a statistic on something like that.
That's not true.
Oh, it isn't. So you have statistics?
We have some statistics, but it's got nothing to do with automobile accidents.
Oh, okay. Now, the fact of the matter is, when you say that there'll be slaughter on the highway, and all you're doing is guessing, isn't that correct?
Well, yes, of course. That's all any of us are doing.
Right. You're not here as an expert on auto accidents.
No, I'm
you're
not.
Here as an expert on as a drug policeman, correct?
I'm not here as an expert on drug abuse, sir.
All right.
I'm here as a federal police officer.
Right, and as a federal police officer, is it fair to say that even though we've had a federal police bureau trying to suppress narcotics, there are more narcotics being used in this country by more people every single day. Isn't that correct?
That's correct.
And isn't it fair to say that the tough law enforcement approach, the lock them up and forget about them approach, has failed?
Oh, no. I don't agree with that proposition at all.
Oh, all right. It's been successful.
No, I'm not saying that either.
All right.
I'm saying that that law enforcement is but one of many approaches to a social problem that has blossomed in the last 5 years.
Right.
And let me ask the last question. What would have happened without a tough enforcement policy? Mr. Terry's position, I take it, is the Volstead Act didn't help with prohibition of alcohol. Why do these acts help with the prohibition of narcotics?
Well, we can go back to the earlier statements that were made in this program, that we had 200,000 addicts in this country in 1900, and when the Harrison Narcotic Act was passed in 1914, they were drastically reduced. And the other witnesses might say that they were old ladies who were drinking tincture of opium, but that's not the case because the draft records of World War I prove the contrary.
Yeah.
So I think the law is a deterrent in this country. It always has, and it probably always will be, to one degree or another.
Mr. Callahan, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Mr. Miller, will you close your argument?
What can one say about a proposal that will allow companies to manufacture and sell and anyone to use all of the drug names that you now see without restriction, without any restriction of law as to dosage, everyone to make his own decision? Simply that the number of users will dramatically go up, as they have every place. That the number of amount of crime will go up, as in fact it went dramatically up in Japan and other places. That the number of deaths will go up. That the amount of human misery that we now have with alcohol will be multiplied again and again and again. Now, this proposal, in the name of reform, will create terror wherever it is implemented. And in the name of freedom, will do nothing but enslave those who were induced to use the drugs.
Mr. Miller, thank you. Mr. Otero, your chance for rebuttal.
We'd like to call at this time Dr. Thomas Zaz.
Let me say for those viewers who just tuned in that Dr. Zaz was Mr. Terry's witness on his case in chief and returns now in rebuttal.
Dr. Zaz, you've heard the three prior witnesses testify. Would you like to first clear up any lingering misconception there may be about ice cream and then go on into a comment on their statement?
Yes, I would like to clear up a few. First, about ice cream, our position was that we were only talking about adults and that the control of the behavior of children is primarily the responsibility of the parents, secondarily of the state, and we are very much in favor of controlling childhood behavior. Second misconception I would like to clear up is the frequent reference to alcohol-related traffic death. Our position, my position, the position that we are presenting tonight is that I certainly would be much harder on that issue than the presently prevailing position. At present, the enlightened, quotes, psychiatric legal position is that when a person commits an offense under alcohol or drugs, that's an extenuating circumstance because he's temporarily mentally ill. My position is that this is a self-induced state, and like in old Roman law, a person who commits a crime under these conditions should be punished with exceptional severity. Our present American attitude on alcohol-related traffic death is very soft. I would suggest being harder on people who murder others with automobiles under alcohol and softer on those who simply take drugs for pleasure. That is our position.
Mr. Otero, do you have another question?
May I make one other point?
Go ahead.
The question was raised repeatedly, what would happen if this proposal were adopted? no one said that the first thing that would happen would be that Mr. Rader and all his colleagues would become unemployed. And secondly, the point was made that drug addicts are hooked. There is more than one way of being hooked. I feel it incumbent upon me to point out that Mr. Rader and perhaps Mr. Callahan also are not free witnesses. If Mr. Rader were to testify in any other way than he has, he would tomorrow be fired.
Well, that's only in the FBI with J. Edgar Hoover.
Every person who has taken any position on this.
Well, that we can't have a
Dr. Zaz, let's hear from Mr. Miller. He may have some questions about your position.
Dr. Zaz, I said that Mr. Rader was the former associate counsel of the House Select Committee on Crime. He, in fact, today has moved to work for the Interstate Commerce Commission and appears here as a totally free man, as in fact does Mr. Callahan. Dr. Zaz, you...
I apologize.
Yes, I...
Although
I
suspect
that
he may be still fired.
You're just ruining your apology.
Yes, you're ruining it completely. You should stop while you're correct. You say that the drug user only harms himself.
No, sir. Of course he harms others.
He does. Who else does he harm?
All of those who depend on him.
All of those who depend on him. So it's not simply a case of personal harm. Since he harms those who depend on him, then doesn't the country have an interest in as much as possible preventing the number of drug users?
But, Mr. Miller, you always argue for freedom. Supposing you quit your job and go and sail off to the South Pacific, you would be harming your wife or children who are depending on your income.
Unless
you illegalize your quitting your job.
Unless the first time I stepped in the ocean, I was inexorably carried along to Hawaii with or without my will.
This has
everything to do with it. The addict hurts his family. He hurts others. He hurts those
who
depend.
He may hurt his family.
He may. If the addict, in fact...
If he continues to work, he doesn't.
Can the opium... How many... The opium addicts in large numbers continue to work, heroin addicts? The facts, in fact, are that your person who can handle it in a together way is very rare in the population. Most heroin addicts, addicts are unable to function.
This has not been tested currently. Before 1915, there were a great many people who did work. And there was a famous study by Kolb, which in 1929, which demonstrated that people who had taken morphine in large doses for 30 and 40 years, many of them worked perfectly well.
Yes, the Kolb study with few people. Kolb, by the way, was the same author I quoted in 1924, who did the study on the reduction in heroin addicts from 1914 to 24. So I'm delighted you accept him as authority. Tell me.
Well, may I read this passage which Mr. Otero just gave me from Goodman and Gilman, which is a standard text. Cutting described the case of a physician who was a morphine addict for 62 years and who exhibited no evidence of mental or physical deterioration.
Yes, and as a matter of fact...
Well, what more do you want? You can't say that for cigarettes.
Because of the availability, physicians as a group are more subject to addiction in the United States
point
as
is,
in England. The one person... Let me ask you a question before we get...
My point is not that addiction is good. My point is that people should be responsible.
Ask you about responsibility. If it's legalized, if it's commercially available, if it is advertised the way alcohol is advertised, more people who others depend upon will become drug users than are now drug users.
Mr. Miller, that is a conjecture. I am not denying it. It may happen, it may not happen.
If
it has nothing to do with the argument. It has nothing to do with the argument. Supposing you let people freely advertise the virtues of atheism, as indeed in America that is possible, and you may be...
The virtues of what? I'm sorry.
Of being irreligious, being an atheist. It's possible that more people will lose their religion.
Well, once again, we're back to atheism, sex, and food. You think the atheist hurts his family the way the drug
uses? If the family is religious, he does.
Well, let me ask you this question. If in fact, you believe that the number of drug users would not only increase, but dramatically increase as a result of legalization, commercialization, if in fact you believe that, given the fact that others are depending on them, would you then change your position on this proposition?
I would not, Mr. Miller.
You would not. You're perfectly prepared to incur the harm in the name of the personal freedom.
I would be perfectly prepared to take a socially Darwinistic position and to take the position that people who want to commit suicide slowly or rapidly have a right to do so. We are building up to the right to destroy oneself. Chemically or by other means.
Dr.
My
Zaz?
Position is that...
Well, no, I want Dr. Zaz to state his position fully.
That's an unqualified right to kill oneself.
Thank you, Dr. Zaz.
Dr. Zaz, thank you.
Thank
very
you.
Consistent, very powerful testimony.
Thank you, Dr.
All right, Mr. Otero, you have 1 minute to summarize your case.
I'd like to start by saying, save me from those so pure that they'll save me from myself. It seems, and that's an original Otero. It seems to me as though the problem here tonight is that the the problem here tonight is that many things are said that we who are raised in the Judeo-Christian theory or society find offensive. The right to commit suicide, the right to use drugs, the right to do things that may hurt others. Well, I think that perhaps it's time we as a society, granted the fact that our present narcotic laws have failed miserably, we have far more addicts, we have an epidemic of drug abuse, and perhaps personal freedom with the encouragement of self-control and mature judgment will do a great deal more than the existing system has done.
Mr. O'Terry, thank you. Mr. Miller, you have a minute.
The amount of use, abuse, addiction, crime, harm would all be dramatically increased if there were no enforcement. That's not the way to go. Dr. Zaz talked about suicide. The truth of the matter is that to create a society which legalizes drugs and it makes it available for commercial exploitation, to allow that exploitation to harm millions in the society, is to create a society in the name of individual freedom, not which allows individual suicide, but which determines the suicide of the entire society.
Mr. Miller, thank you. Now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for you at home to act on tonight's question. On all our programs, we ask you to act, and we're doing it right now. Should all drugs be legalized? And what do you think? We want you to write to the Advocates, Box 1971, Boston, 02134. We'll tabulate your views, and we'll make them known to the Congress, and the Bureau of Narcotics, and to others concerned with this issue. Will you let us know? Every one of your votes is important. Remember that address, the Advocates, Box 1970, Boston, 02134.